You're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR with Guy Raz.
I think you can do that.
Yeah, you know, I was extrapolating with my arms.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I should introduce you, or do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay, my name is John Ronson, and I am an author, non-fiction author.
Have you ever, like, lost it completely, like, not, like, angry, but, like, lost control over what's happening in your head?
Oh, yes. Frequently, like, you know, well, once a week. Well, I mean, I suffer from anxiety, so quite often, you know, one intrusive thought will mash up into another intrusive thought, and it will kind of spiral. I mean, that's sort of part of the course with me.
Like, you can't concentrate on anything else? You're totally distracted by that one thing in your head?
Yeah, well, actually, the very worst occasion it ever happened, it was actually in Washington, D.C., where you are now. I was in a hotel room, and I had this deal with my wife. This is when my baby was very young. I had a deal with my wife that she would always phone me like at 8:30 p.m. British time to tell me that everything was okay and Joel was asleep. One time she didn't phone, and I was in a hotel room in Washington, D.C., and I called her and I couldn't get her. And I panicked, and I became convinced that, you know, they were dead. And it was just so, you know, it was so irrational. And I started phoning the police and the fire brigade and my brother and the neighbours. Anyway, it turned out that she'd had a power cut and was at a friend's house and had forgot to call me. And then when I checked out of the hotel the next morning, the phone bill came, and it was for $900 for one night.
Do you know something?
Uh-huh.
I've done the same thing.
Or exactly the same?
Yeah, almost exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I say in one of my books, The Psychopath Test, that I have panicked unnecessarily in all four corners of the globe. it's just...
So the book John just mentioned, The Psychopath Test, it's why we asked him to be part of today's program. We're talking about that place between madness and sanity. Anyway, John Ronson spent a year exploring what a psychopath is, and it became a kind of journey into his own mind. He's talked a lot about this over the past few years, including on stage at TED. We're going to hear your TED Talk in a sec. Is there anything we should know before we hear it?
Yes. This was part of a TED conference called Full Spectrum, and the idea was that people would try and come up with new ways of giving talks. So it wouldn't just be, you know, you're talking in front of a PowerPoint. So Chris Anderson, when he asked me to do it, said he wanted to put me together with an audio man called Julian Treasure to do live audio on stage while I talked, like responding to the things I was saying. So you'll hear audio in the background, and that was actually happening live on stage right behind me.
Okay, let's hear it, and I might have some questions for you along the way.
This story starts. I was at a friend's house, and she had on her shelf a copy of the DSM manual, which is the Manual of Mental Disorders. It lists every known mental disorder. And it used to be, back in the 50s, a very slim pamphlet, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and now it's 886 pages long, and it lists currently 374 mental disorders. So I was leafing through it, wondering if I had any mental disorders, and it turns out I've got 12. I've got generalized anxiety disorder, which is a given. I've got nightmare disorder, which is categorized if you have recurrent dreams of being pursued or declared a failure. And all my dreams involve people chasing me down the street going, "You're a failure." I've got parent-child relational problems, which I blame my parents for. I'm kidding. And I've got malingering. And I think it's actually quite rare to have both malingering and generalized anxiety disorder, because malingering tends to make me feel very anxious. Anyway, I was looking through this book, wondering if I was much crazier than I thought I was, or maybe it's not a good idea to diagnose yourself with a mental disorder if you're not a trained professional, or maybe the psychiatry profession has a kind of strange desire to label what's essentially normal human behavior as a mental disorder. I didn't know which of these things was true, but I thought it was kind of interesting, and I thought maybe I should meet a critic of psychiatry to get their view, which is how I ended up having lunch with the Scientologists. It was a man called Brian, who runs a crack team of Scientologists who are determined to destroy psychiatry wherever it lies. They're called the CCHR. And I said to him, can you prove to me that psychiatry is a pseudoscience that can't be trusted? And he said, yes, we can prove it to you. And I said, how? And he said, we can introduce you to Tony. And I said, who's Tony? And he said, Tony's in Broadmoor. Now, Broadmoor is Broadmoor Hospital. It used to be known as the Broadmoor Asylum for the Criminally Insane. It's where they send the serial killers and the people who can't help themselves. And I said to Brian, well, what did Tony do? And he said, hardly anything. He beat someone up or something, and he decided to fake madness to get out of a prison sentence, but he faked it too well, and now he's stuck in Broadmoor, and nobody will believe he's sane. Do you want us to try and get you into Broadmoor to meet Tony? So I said, yes, please. So I got the train to Broadmoor. I began to yawn uncontrollably around Kempton Park, which apparently is what dogs also do when anxious. They yawn uncontrollably. And we got to Broadmoor, and I got taken through gate after gate after gate after gate into the wellness centre, which is where you get to meet the patients. It looks like a giant Hampton Inn. It's all peach and pine and calming colours, and the only bold colours are the reds of the panic buttons. And the patients started drifting in, and they were quite overweight and wearing sweatpants and quite docile looking, and Brian, the Scientologist, whispered to me, they're medicated, which to the Scientologist is like the worst evil in the world, but I'm thinking it's probably a good idea. And then Brian said, here's Tony. And a man was walking in, and he wasn't overweight. He was in very good physical shape, and he wasn't wearing sweatpants. He was wearing a pinstripe suit, and he had his arm outstretched like someone out of The Apprentice. He looked like a man who wanted to wear an outfit that would convince me that he was very sane. And he sat down, and I said, so is it true that you faked your way in here? And he said, yep, yep, absolutely. I beat someone up when I was 17, and I was in prison awaiting trial, and my cellmate said to me, you know what you have to do? Fake madness. Tell him you're mad, you'll get sent to some cushy hospital, nurses will bring you pizzas, you'll have your own PlayStation. So I said, well, how did you do it? He said, well, I asked to see the prison psychiatrist, and I'd just seen a film called Crash, in which people get sexual pleasure from crashing cars into walls. So I said to the psychiatrist, I get sexual pleasure from crashing cars into walls. And I said, what else? He said, oh yeah, I told the psychiatrist that I wanted to watch women as they died because it would make me feel more normal. And I said, where'd you get that from? He said, oh, from a biography of Ted Bundy that they had in the prison library. Anyway, he faked madness too well, he said, and they didn't send him to some cushy hospital. They sent him to Broadmoor. And the minute he got there, he said he took one look at the place, asked to see the psychiatrist, said, there's been a terrible misunderstanding. I'm not mentally ill. I said, how long have you been here for? He said, well, if I'd just done my time in prison for the original crime, I'd have got 5 years. I've been in Broadmoor for 12 years.
Hold on one sec. How could he explain this in such a calm way? I mean, he was taking this in stride. Like, this is, well, you know, I guess I'm stuck here.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, he never was happy to be stuck there. You know, he saw me as a possible way out of Broadmoor. So he was actually very friendly and cheerful, but very keen to make me an ally in some way.
And he was just supposed to be there for 5 years. He was there for 12 years. I mean, that would drive him crazy, probably.
Oh, my God. And also, the way Broadmoor's set up, if you engage with the therapy, it means they can detain you indefinitely. I mean, that's the kind of, you know, the sort of weird catch-22 that they have at Broadmoor. So one way that Tony thought he could get out was to completely disengage in every single way with everybody there. So he refused to make small talk. He refused to you know, a sort of war of non-cooperation. He thought that would be his way out. But of course, you know, that made him seem crazy too. So there was no winning.
It turns out that you called his clinician who told you that actually a telltale sign of being a psychopath is faking madness.
Exactly. So Broadmoor accepted after a while that, yes, he had faked madness to escape a prison sentence because his hallucinations had seemed quite clichéd and they vanished the minute he got to Broadmoor. But they'd assessed him and they determined that what he actually is
a psychopath. And in fact, faking madness is exactly the kind of cunning and manipulative act of a psychopath. It's on the checklist, cunning, manipulative. So faking your brain going wrong is evidence that your brain has gone wrong. And I spoke to other experts, and they said the pinstripe suit, classic psychopath, speaks to items 1 and 2 on the checklist, glibness, superficial charm, a grandiose sense of self-worth. And I said, I want to hang out with the other patients. Classic psychopath, it speaks to grandiosity and also lack of empathy. So all the things that had seemed most normal about Tony was evidence, according to his clinician, that he was mad in this new way. He was a psychopath. And his clinician said to me, if you want to know more about psychopaths, you can go on a psychopath spotting course run by Robert Hare, who invented the psychopath checklist. So I did. I went on a psychopath spotting course, and I am now a certified, and I have to say extremely adept, psychopath spotter. So here's the statistics. 1 in 100 regular people is a psychopath. So there's 1,500 people in this room. 15 of you are psychopaths. Although that figure rises to 4% of CEOs and business leaders, so I think there's a very good chance there's about 30 or 40 psychopaths in this room. It could be carnage by the end of the night. When I got back to London, Tony phoned me. He said, why haven't you been returning my calls? I said, well, they say that you're a psychopath. And he said, I'm not a psychopath. He said, you know what? One of the items on the checklist is lack of remorse. But another item on the checklist is cunning manipulative. So when you say you feel remorse for your crime, they say, typical of the psychopath, to cunningly say he feels remorse when he doesn't. It's like witchcraft. They turn everything upside down. He said, I've got a tribunal coming up. Will you come to it? So I said, okay. So I went to his tribunal. And after 14 years in Broadmoor, they let him go. They decided that he shouldn't be held indefinitely because he scores high on a checklist that might mean that he would has a greater than average chance of recidivism. So they let him go. And outside in the corridor, he said to me, you know what, John? Everyone's a bit psychopathic. He said, you are, I am. Well, obviously I am. I said, what are you going to do now? He said, I'm going to go to Belgium because there's a woman there that I fancy, but she's married, so I'm going to have to get a split up from her husband. Anyway, that was 2 years ago, and that's where my book ended. And for the last 20 months, everything was fine. Nothing bad happened. He was living with a girl outside London. He was, according to Brian the Scientologist, making up for lost time, which I know sounds ominous, but isn't necessarily ominous. Unfortunately, after 20 months, he did go back to jail for a month. He got into a fracas in a bar, he called it, ended up going to jail for a month, which I know is bad, but at least a month implies that it's whatever the fracas was, wasn't too bad. And then he phoned me. And you know what? I think it's right that Tony is out, because you shouldn't define people by their maddest edges. And what Tony is he's a semi-psychopath. He's a gray area in a world that doesn't like gray areas. But the gray areas are where you find the complexity, and it's where you find the humanity, and it's where you find the truth. And Tony said to me, John, can I buy you a drink in a bar? I just want to thank you for everything you've done for me. And I didn't go. What would you have done? Thank you.
Do you regret it, not going?
No, I don't, because for all the ambiguities of the story, and I, you know, remain pleased that Tony managed to get out of Broadmoor. He is a psychopath, and I've got a family. You've got to be careful. I mean, that's just the terrible truth of it. And again, for all the ambiguities of the story and for all the criticisms you can have of the culture of labelling, the culture of checklists, the, you know, ever-burgeoning nature of the DSM, conditions exist, psychopathy exists, whatever you want to call it, it exists. And I think it's really important, actually, that, you know, I've always wanted this, my book and my TED Talk to stay very firmly in the middle ground, to see the truth and the problems on both sides of the argument.
Because it seems like that, like writing this book was almost like a journey of self-discovery, you know? I mean, I don't mean that like, you know, like in an Oprah way, but in like a... like you start to see psychopathic things in yourself.
Absolutely. I saw that to get on in journalism, I need to adopt certain psychopathic character traits. I need to be manipulative in my introductory emails. I need to not care about how people come over. And so it certainly became a book about me trying to work out my own sense of personal morality. It's also very much a book about how I became drunk with my psychopath spotting abilities and misused the psychopath checklist, and how confirmation bias, which is the way that people will only see things that confirm their pre-existing beliefs, is a huge problem. And I think the book is a kind of cautionary tale about don't succumb to confirmation bias.
It's almost like there's two ends of the spectrum. And as you, and you said this, I mean, that most of us are in that gray area between madness and sanity.
Yes, yes. Very real conditions. I mean, obviously, everybody knows, you know, these conditions really exist. A lot of people really do have something. But there seems to be an increasing move towards conformity. And so the boundary of what it's of what is normal is getting narrower and narrower and narrower, to the extent that more than 50% of Americans soon will be diagnosable with a mental disorder. So being not normal is the new normal.
Where are you on the spectrum? Are you closer to madness or sanity?
A little crazy.
Me too. Should we get a drink? Writer John Ronson. His book is called The Psychopath Test. Thanks for listening to the show this week. If you missed any of it, or you want to hear more, or want to find out more about who was on it, you can visit ted.npr.org. You can also find many more TED Talks at ted.com, and you can download this program through iTunes or through the NPR smartphone app. Our program was produced by Jeff Rogers, Megan Kane, Brent Bachman, and Neva Grant, with help from Portia Robertson-Migas and Eric Newsom. Thanks to our partners at TED, Chris Anderson, June Cohen, Darren Triff, and Janet Lee. I'm Guy Raz. You've been listening to Ideas Worth Spreading on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.